Thank you, Cody. Good afternoon. It is a beautiful day, although it's a little too warm to wear this mask, and then we get a rash. And hello to those of you who are peering in from the camera. I assume there are thousands. Welcome to Newport virtually. As you know from the bulletin, I want to speak about Romans today. Romans is a wonderful work. Perhaps some of your favorite, very favorite scriptures are in that book. But Romans also makes some puzzling statements, especially statements about the law. In fact, on that particular subject, I think Romans is the most difficult book in the Bible, personally. That's what I think. Some of its meanings have been debated for centuries. It seems to me that before we understand the meaning of Paul's words, we need to understand his reason for writing it. Paul no doubt had a good reason for writing the letter to the Romans, but what was it? He never had been to Rome. He doesn't seem to know any particular problem there at Rome. Not like in Corinthians, at least. He writes to Corinthians with all their issues. And he put a lot of work into this particular letter. It's an extremely long letter, especially for an ancient work. I found zondervanacademic.com, who says the average Greco-Roman personal letter was 90 words. The average literary letter at that time was 200 words. Well, Paul wrote a letter of 7,000 words, so he writes this letter 35 times longer than the average literary letter of the day. He writes it to a church that he doesn't know, a church without any particular problem to address. Why? I think the purpose for the letter is addressed in the very first chapter of Romans. I'd like to turn there and go through some of the verses at the beginning of Romans today. And I think it's important because the meaning of the letter has to be, I think, interpreted in the light of his reason for writing it. The why of what he writes reveals a lot about what he means by what he writes. First of all, before we turn there, I think Romans has to be understood as being written right on the heels of Galatians. Romans had to have been written, I think, because of the same issues that prompted Galatians. The two letters were written at the same time from Corinth, about 57 AD. They make a lot of the same points. If you've seen comparisons between the two letters, they use a lot of the same language. They make many of the same arguments with the same scriptures. Romans is a lot longer, of course, and it covers those subjects more fully, but they're just too close in time, in place, in content, for their purpose not to be related to one another. It's got to be written for the same purpose. And Galatians opens with Paul defending himself against the charge that he is not a full apostle. He doesn't know the real God. He doesn't know the real Christ. He doesn't know the full meaning of the gospel. His opponents in Galatians charge that he's just the apostle of men, that he only says what he's heard from the apostles in Jerusalem. He doesn't know the Christ. I think this is quite plain in Galatians, and that has to be in his thoughts at the same time when he follows it with the letter to the Romans. Second, we're going to turn to Romans then and see his purpose expressed at the very beginning of the letter. And it's often key to the purpose of the letter to look at how it starts. Romans 1, verse 1, Paul, a bondservant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated to the gospel of God. Again, the first thing that he starts with is that he is an apostle, that he was chosen by Jesus Christ. He is hitting here the same idea head-on that he fought in Galatians, at the beginning of Galatians. He apparently expects those teachers, that same philosophy, to come to Rome. They'll make the same arguments about his apostleship, and he says he's been called by Jesus Christ himself. and he preaches the gospel of the true God, as opposed to what they're going to claim. Verse 2, the gospel which he promised before through his prophets in the Holy Scriptures. So the big point here is that the gospel is based on the Scriptures. This is also head-on against the same philosophy, against the opposing of philosophy in Galatia. Those teachers had said that Christ was revealed to them and had revealed to them a God who was unknown in the Old Testament, a God who was higher than the God of the Old Testament. Those opponents do not mean, they don't believe the plain meaning of the Scriptures. Paul says it's the gospel is based on the Scriptures. And what this shows also to note here, especially, Romans is not about Judaism. He's not fighting Judaism here. Judaism does not preach another gospel about Christ. It does not teach that there is a God higher than the God of the Old Testament. This letter is not written against Judaism. It's written against something else. The threat here is not pulling Christians back toward Judaism. It's pulling them sideways into a different understanding of Christ. And we can't forget that as we read through the rest of the letter. So this gospel, he says, verse 3, concerning his son Jesus Christ our Lord, who was born of the seed of David according to the flesh. Once again, a descendant of David. This is in direct contradiction to the idea that the Christ is an emissary of a previously unknown God, and the idea that the Christ is a spirit who would never be a lowly flesh and blood man. He was a descendant of David. And verse 4, declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead. The Christ is not only the Son and the Son of the God of the Old Testament, he is proven to be that Son by the resurrection from the dead. This is, again, in direct contradiction to the idea that Christ was not flesh and blood. Paul's opponents are saying that Christ was not flesh and could never have died. That's a very different gospel than what Paul is preaching here. And I also note in this verse, verse 4, he says that Christ is the Son according to the Spirit of holiness. Holiness here is a word, quite a unique word. I think it only appears 3 times in the New Testament, but it's about upright behavior. Christ is an example of upright behavior. This is in direct opposition as well to the behavior that followed the false gospel as it appeared in Galatia. And by this Christ, he says in verse 5, the Son of God, verse 5, through him we have received grace and apostleship for the obedience to the faith among all nations for his name. In other words, through this Christ we've been given an opportunity. It's the goodness of God who's given us the opportunity. And the reason for the calling, for your calling, is stated succinctly here, for the obedience to the faith. This is so important. Throughout the rest of the book, there are times when Paul seems to contrast, in fact, he does contrast, things called faith and works of law. And so many interpreters want to convince us that faith versus obedience is the reason for the letter, that Paul wants us to stop trying to be so Jewish and just start believing in Christ. But right here, in this verse, is the central purpose statement. The reason for our calling is obedience to the faith. There is never a conflict between obedience and faith. Faith is adherence to the faith. We have to remember that as we interpret the rest of this letter. Works of law, as appears later in the book, is something else. It is something else. Before Christ, obedience was too often just a matter of form and ritual and not conversion. God is calling people to actually practice the faith. You are called for obedience to the faith. And those of you who are called to it not just as Jews or descendants of Abraham, but verse 6, among whom you also are called of Jesus Christ, to all who are in Rome. Those would be Jews and Gentiles, beloved of God, called to be saints. So thirdly, here, beyond the parallels to Galatians and these opening objective statements, this letter is not written to just the Romans. It's not written to just... This letter is indeed sent to Rome. It says here, to all who are in Rome. But you'll notice that Paul does not address any of them by name. He does not know them. But you will say, because you've read the whole letter, you know that in chapter 16, he greets about 50 different people, many of them by name. He knew them well. But I'm persuaded that the letter that you hold in your lap right now is a copy of Romans that was sent to Ephesus. I say that because of several indications, and I don't have time to go again over that. But there are, in general, many people in chapter 16 who are associated with Ephesus, not Rome. He knows a large number of them, those people, and he knows them well because he spent a lot of time in Ephesus. So indications that he wrote this long treatise to the Romans are true. He wrote 15 chapters to the Romans, but he felt it was so important that he sent copies to at least one other church. At least he sent one copy, I think, to Ephesus. And he tacked on to that letter personal greetings to about 50 different people that he knew in Ephesus. And because that copy that went to Ephesus was archived in the Ephesian church, it was preserved. It was copied and recopied, and it resulted in the letter that's on your lap today. If this is true, and not everybody buys this, of course, if this is true, then it is added proof that the letter was not written for a specific problem. It was not written just for the Roman church. It was written to a general problem that was spreading. It was spreading in Paul's churches, and he expects that problem to come to Rome. No reason why it won't. And he expects it to come to Ephesus too, so he sends a copy to Ephesus. Verse 8, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. He's heard of them, the congregation in Rome. Verse 9, for God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. He certainly knows of them, although, as I said, I don't think he knows them personally. Verse 10, making request if by some means, now at last, I may find a way in the will of God to come to you. For I long to see you, that I may impart to you some spiritual gift, that you may be established. He has not yet, therefore, imparted those spiritual gifts. He's not been there. He's laying out a framework in this letter of the true gospel, lest the philosophy that is taking on the name of Christ should deceive them. He wants them to be established, which is a word very much like the meaning of faith. He wants to set them firmly into that obedience of the faith, not only in person, but in this letter. So he's going to write 15 chapters to outline the great principles of his gospel, and I think to warn them away from the heretical gospel that is troubling the church. So why did Paul write Romans? He wrote it to contradict the growing false ideas that he had seen before in Corinth and in Galatia. He apparently thought they would come to Rome, the capital city, if they hadn't come there already. So he laid out this, the letter to the Romans, his longest and greatest treatise, one because it was triggered by those events that he'd seen elsewhere. Two, because it addresses those same wrong ideas. It starts by addressing the same wrong ideas that he had fought in Galatia. And three, because the value of those ideas are general, not just to the church at Rome, but to elsewhere, where he also probably sent this letter. Romans contested a philosophy that would, I think Paul expected, come to the capital city of the empire, but he wanted the Romans to be grounded in the truth. And what follows then in this letter should be interpreted in the light of that purpose.